Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, our roundtable podcast about what we're watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. This week, it's almost time again for Free Comic Book Day, so we'll talk about what's on offer there. And in our second segment, the new Key & Peele comedy, Keanu, has an adorable kitten in it, but that's not all we'll be talking about. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week, so stick around.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Check out NPR's Bullseye with Jesse Thorne, an excellent guide to what's good in pop culture. This week, Jesse Thorne talks with Academy Award-winning actor Gina Davis and Emmy Award-winning comedian Louis C.K. Find your new favorite TV shows, books, movies, and music, and gain new insights into the things you already love. Find Bullseye now at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
We're all about comic books and cat movies this week, but before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And Petra Mayer, what do you do at NPR?
I'm an editor at NPR Books, and as will become relevant later, one of Public Radio's official cat people.
That's right. And one of Public Radio's people who reads comics, which is
that
one
is
of the reasons why we thought it would be fun to have Petra here for a show that we've done a few times, which is our Free Comic Book Day show. Glenn, you want to talk a little bit about what Free Comic Book Day is?
Sure. It's joy is what it is. It's free comic books. On the first Saturday of every May, you can walk into a comic book store and they will hand you a bunch of free comic books. This is the 15th annual Free Comic Book Day, and I have been writing about it for NPR for the last eight, turns out. So, it's some stores you walk in, they'll hand you a packet. Some you'll be able to pick and choose.
Yep.
Depends. You can find the nearest store that is actually participating in this by going to freecomicbookday.com and typing your zip code into the shop locator. I've been doing this for 8 years, and I've noticed some changes. There are 50 different comics that you could theoretically get on Free Comic Book Day,
right?
In addition to the ones that the store actually sells. And this year, that seems to be a bit more female protagonists, just in general. Fewer superheroes, which is interesting, if nothing less.
Yeah.
And a lot less of the warrior babes in bikinis genre, which, now, there's nothing wrong with warrior babes in bikinis, but it just seems like there might be listening to the fact that the audience is different. And there's also a lot more all-ages books than there normally are, which is also an encouraging sign. So I handed out to each of you six of the 50 books. Each
yes,
of you had
you
six.
Did.
And so let's go around the table and see what y'all thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Stephen, what did you think of the ones that Glenn gave to you?
Well, part of the fun of it was figuring out why Glenn chose them for me. It's a little bit like when Linda gives a quiz and, you know, you try to sort out, you know, you're trying to break down Linda's brain. There was a certain amount of trying to figure out, what does Glenn see in me that makes him think that I would like this? And for example, there's one here, is billed as a mixtape, and it's got three different titles in one fairly slim book. And so you get samples from each one. And the three books here are Mercy Sparks, Year One, Badger, and Squarriers, Prelude to Summer, and it about Squirrel Warriors.
Yeah, you could probably figure that out.
And ordinarily, one would think, Glenn gave this to me because of Squarriors, but I know that you gave it to me because of Badger.
I did.
Which is a Wisconsin-based...
Madison, Wisconsin-based.
Oh, boy.
I believe he's based in Barneville, which is not terribly far from Madison.
This is why you got that comic.
And in it, the titular Badger character fights Vladimir Putin. Now, I have to admit to a familial bias, Mike Barron, the writer of that book, has been a family friend since I was a tiny, tiny, tiny little child. But it's very fun to watch a gritty superhero with 80s hair pummel Vladimir Putin. But the mixtape speaks to a little bit of my frustration with the format of some of these Free Comic Book Day books, which is they're giving you very barren sketches of what you're going to get if you ultimately buy these books each month. And some of them have a tendency to pick up in midstream a little bit or do this very frustrating thing that the Pokemon comic book you gave me does, in addition to fortifying my complete bafflement at the Pokeverse, which, of course, my kids understand top to bottom.
Yeah.
I find it just completely inscrutable.
As I said on the site, if you do not know anything about Pokemon, that book reads to you like some kind of weird pictogram language from some alien species that really likes seeing cute things womp each other.
Yeah.
It's mystifying.
It is absolutely mystifying. And I showed it to my daughter just out of curiosity, like, does this make any sense to you? And she was like, yeah, Dad. And she expressed the same frustration that I did, which is it's a partial story.
Yeah.
And what it really comes across as to me is if it were like Free Song Day, but you just got like a verse.
Yeah.
And then like the run up to a chorus.
Yeah.
So I find that kind of thing frustrating. What I vastly prefer are what my two favorites of the six books you gave me do. One is a comic for The Legend of Korra. Mm-hmm. On Nickelodeon, and one is for a series called Oddly Normal. Mm-hmm. And what they both do is introduce you to these characters. And one of the great strengths of something like Free Comic Book Day is the idea is you want to get into new franchises. It's not just that you want to get into the practice of reading comic books, which, as we all know, is a great thing to do, but people have been recommending The Legend of Korra to me for years, just as they've been recommending Avatar The Last Airbender to me for years. Mm-hmm. And this was an opportunity for me to start to dig into what that series is all about and give me a sense like, yeah, this is good. This is engagingly told. There's a cute dog. I like these characters. I would read more of this. But it sort of starts from a clear beginning point. Oddly Normal does the same thing. It's introducing you to a 10-year-old who is the child of a witch and a normal person. Mm-hmm. And it gives you the setup for the story that's being told, which is basically a wish that the parents would disappear and the parents disappear. But you also get a sense of like, this is very cute, engaging, kind of graphic novel-y art. And I'm into it. I'm on board. I would read more. And I think that's where the real value of Free Comic Book Day is. It's not just encouraging people to get into their comic shop, but it's getting people to try out franchises they haven't tried out before.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the limitations of this is exactly that. The publishers approach this in two different ways. Some do, here's a sampler of a bunch of our different books, right, as you say, which is a risk because you get a great sense of how wide their publishing line is, but who cares about that? I mean, that's right, not why. That's something that the publisher, right, cares very much about. Look at all the different things we're doing, but the reader doesn't want that, and the reader just wants a story, and they want some, yeah, kind of glimpse, and you need more than three or four pages to get, yeah, any kind of sense of any of these things. Oddly Normal does Free Comic Book Day exactly right by, yes, starting you off and then saying, if you like this, here's a preview of some things that are going to, yes, happen later on in the story. That, yeah, is so smart. That's what everybody, yeah, should be doing.
Yeah.
And when you get just an excerpt, even if it's a, you know, book-length excerpt, that is still a risk because that's just, you're doubling down on one story. But as far as the different kind of approaches that publishers can take, that one makes more sense to me.
Yeah. All right. How about you, Petra?
Well, I don't have to guess what Glenn's, why Glenn assigned me the ones that he did, because I've got Doctor Who, mm-hmm, Firefly, mm-hmm, some goth chick on the moon, a fat superheroine, and Grumpy Cat.
And Grumpy Cat.
So I liked what Stephen said about the distinction between just giving you like a verse of a song and, mm-hmm, a whole little self-contained story. Both Doctor Who, which has four little stories from each of the four modern doctors, and this book, the Dark Horse Sampler, which is Serenity, Hellboy, and Aliens. Lovely art in all of them, and also really good at introducing, here's what this property is all about, here's a very short self-contained story with a little bit of emotional punch that leaves you kind of satisfied and with a nice idea of what that book is going to be about if you read it. Sort of TV spin-offs are a little bit weird. Like sometimes they're, especially Doctor Who, can be kind of hit or miss. Mm-hmm. I guess they figure, you know, it's a property that you know and love, you're going to buy everything associated with it, even if it's not very good. Gosh, it's like, they know me. Mm-hmm. but these are, this particularly the 11th Doctor story,
yeah,
had a nice emotional punch to it. It's all about sort of what you choose to focus on when you live for as long as the Doctor does.
Exactly. Yeah, tie-ins, spin-offs, franchises, any kind of tie-in comic is always hit or miss, and they tend towards suckage, just as a general rule. Those two, you're right, they really, the Serenity story kind of snuck up on me.
Oh, it was so sweet.
It's really riffing on, yeah, what you know about the series in a really interesting way, and I really thought the Doctor Who stories really captured some of the snap of the dialogue.
Yes, which doesn't always happen. I mean, I read a lot of the Doctor Who comics.
Yeah.
And also with TV comics, you get people struggling with how to represent characters that we already know how,
right,
they look.
Right.
You know, you can't employ headcanon with this because you know.
Yeah.
You know what the 10th Doctor looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And some, you know, that can also be a little hit or miss, but I thought that each of these was pretty good at depicting characters that we know. This one, you also give me the Valiant 2016 sampler, which was interesting to me because I had no idea what Valiant Comics was. So I went down this wiki wormhole. And as far as I can tell, they're basically an indie started by Marvel refugees with the aim of sort of replicating a similar setup to the Marvel universe, mm-hmm, in all its complexity. Anyway, so the thing that I want to talk about in this is Faith, the fat superheroine.
The plus-size superhero.
I can say that because, you know, she looks like me, which is really nice. I am very skeptical of depictions of large people in media. We're not often treated well. Mm-hmm. And I was worried when I saw this that it was going to be even something like well-intentioned, like, I don't know, you know, in Drop Dead Diva,
which was that,
you know, she always had a donut in her hand. I mean, come on, there are times in my life when I don't have a donut in my hand.
You know? I would venture to say most times.
Okay, this morning I did. But, like, most of the time I don't, you know. And so, like I said, I had all the side eye in the world for this. And then I read it, and actually, I'd like to see more. Mm-hmm. What I really liked was that she's just there.
Yep.
Like, she isn't shown stuffing her face. Mm-hmm. Nobody talks about it. We don't see her looking in the mirror or pinching a roll or not fitting into her. Mm-hmm. Her costume is appropriate and flattering. And somehow it's much more real when a fat chick flies, you know? And I was grateful for that. I found it refreshing. I'd like to see more.
Yeah, it's great. The other titles in that sampler, I normally have not clicked into the Valiant universe for various reasons, because I think the samplers that I've seen are just so dense with backstory. This is attempting to kind of narrow things down and just tell you a few different stories, and there's some really good ideas in that.
Yeah, for reasons. Obviously, Faith was the one that I clicked into, but I did think they were all reasonably engaging. Mm-hmm. My favorite, actually, of all the ones you gave me, I think, was Moon Cop.
Yay, it's my favorite, too.
Which I didn't expect to like, because I tend not to be the person who likes the arty ones. Mm-hmm. Y'all know where my tastes lie.
This is a British cartoonist, Tom Gauld, who is very, very funny. He's known for his, like, literary-themed comics. This is an excerpt from his upcoming graphic novel.
Right. You guys may know him because he wrote You're All Just Jealous of My Jetpack, which was Glenn's pick for the first edition of the Book Concierge back in 2013. Mm-hmm. And it was my pick for, oh, I really need to read that. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't, and I felt bad. So this is a little introductory story about this little dude who's a cop on the moon in a crumbling colony. Everybody's sort of lost the will to live in space, and they've all packed up and moved back to Earth, and it's just him and a few other people. And this is just a tiny little vignette about him helping to find this lady find her lost dog who's gone wandering in his moon bubble.
Yep.
And it's so atmospheric and charming and strange. And the weird thing that I noticed about it, which may just be a function of Tom Gauld's style, is that there's no motion lines anywhere in it. Mm-hmm. So everybody seems to be floating in this strange, quiet space. And so the art really complemented the story in that way, because it's sort of about this crumbling, abandoned place. And the little dog in his little space bubble was so cute. It was just... Anyways, I really enjoyed Moon Cop. I'm totally going to read more of it.
His style is very simple, almost stick figures, and so his characters don't have any kind of expression. It's all very blank, affectless, and that's its charm. That you just kind of find yourself leaning into the book more because you want to get more out of it.
Yeah. Great. Well, the ones that Glenn gave me, he gave me six, and I decided I would focus on three. So the first one is Camp Midnight, which is about a little girl whose parents put her on the wrong bus, and she winds up at essentially monster summer camp.
I'm in.
There's a lot of stuff about showing your true self, and it has a lot of themes that are very much, I thought very much, Stephen, about your kids, particularly your daughter, with this book, because it does have kind of a horror element to it, because it's all these, you know, terrible, scary monsters.
You're waving it around. I'm stealing it with my eyes.
Yeah. As you can, on the front cover of the book, there's a big red hand, and the way that they kind of wash panels with color.
Coloring is really interesting in this book.
Is really cool, and even I noticed that, and I always think of myself as someone who doesn't notice as much as I should about the visuals of comics, but even I thought about that a lot. I'm really interested in this. I would read more of this. I always hesitate to say I will read more of this because there's so much in the world that I want to read, but I am interested in this, and it has a kind of a cartoony thing, but it also, she's very like plain spoken and a little bit, I wouldn't say the girl is dirty mouthed, but she's not pleasant mouthed in a way that I think might appeal
This really sounds like my daughter.
I was going to say, I thought about her a lot as I was reading this. I really enjoyed that one. I also really enjoyed a book called March, which is an excerpt from each of the three books in this series, spearheaded by John Lewis, Congressman John Lewis, about the civil rights movement. And I was fascinated by this idea of really straight-faced history as the topic of a comic. I thought it worked really well. I thought it was really compelling. I found myself thinking, yeah, I'd read more of this too, despite the fact that I know this history, certainly not the way that John Lewis would tell it, but I'm saying like the basic facts of it I know. And I really was interested to see history come in this form as a separate thing from like, you know, fictional films. It's kind of how does this fit in with like a drama like Selma versus documentaries? It's interesting to think about another way to kind of look at history. So I really enjoyed that one. The one that kind of came out of nowhere for me that I was really surprised how much I liked it was Archie.
Yeah.
So this is kind of like a reimagined Archie. And I was reading it thinking, like, what is the vibe that I'm getting off of this that I'm trying to identify? And it's YA. They're trying to create a comic book that is credibly like good YA. There is a kind of a, you know, the high school romance, as you naturally have in there. But there's also, there's a kind of a lovely melodrama to the way that they see their lives and themselves. And I really found it very charming. And I found myself just kind of reading it and reading it and reading it. And then it also comes with this Jughead title, which again is so, is really a kind of odd and offbeat and has, you know, really witty writing.
By Chip Zdarsky.
Yeah.
Who
is the artist
Sex Criminals.
Sex Criminals.
No? Yeah. I really, I dug that a lot. I dug the Archie and I dug the Jughead. And I thought that's not necessarily something I would have seen coming. But I really, I enjoyed that a lot. Great. I would read more of that too.
It's the whole idea is they're making Archie less cartoony and they're making it more almost photorealistic. I mean, he doesn't have the tic-tac-toe sign on the side of his head anymore. He just looks like a kid and they look like modern kids. The March book is really, really great. A lot of times I've taken, you know, elements from history and just hired a comic book artist and said, here, make it a comic. That's not this. This is art by Nate Powell, and he's really dug in. And he really captures the turbulence of the time, and you also capture some of the nobility of the people who are involved and some of the evil people around them. It really, you feel it. It's so expressive.
It's not just, I think with March also, if I can jump in, it's not just the nobility, it's the humanity of the people involved.
Absolutely.
Because John Lewis was there, and you mentioned that. That's what's so great about those books to me is the extra perspective that you get, the eyewitness of, you know, he saw the whole thing, warts and all.
Absolutely. Oh, great. Okay, so let me list the all-ages books that I think you should pick up real quick. Whistle Stop Tour. Boom, 2016. There's a Mouse Guard story in that book that really sells it. Dark Lily and Friends I liked. Doctor Who, Science Comics, Bob's Burgers.
The Bob's Burgers one is a really nice book. Art is gorgeous.
It is. And what I like about it is they're letting people take slightly different attacks on it.
And the art is almost fantagraphic-y. It's almost like Dan Clowsy.
Yeah, it doesn't feel mass-produced. It doesn't feel like it's gone through some kind of studio. Bongo Comics, Bruce Lee was a surprise. Bruce Lee, Rise of the Dragon, I think is called, is a story about they've defrosted Bruce Lee. He's back. He's amnesiac. And there's some jokes. Camp Midnight, DC Superhero Girls is basically, they've redesigned some of the DC female superheroes for kids. This is finally a superhero comic starring superhero women that you can hand to a girl and not feel squicky about it. In terms of the teen books, and again, these categories are very loose. Archie, One Punch Man, Serenity, Valiant 2016, Love and Rockets, March, and for the Teen Plus books, Captain America and Civil War II, all are worth picking up.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Glenn, for giving us all these books. I will be curious to hear how all of you do on Free Comic Book Day. And again, we've got Glenn's post on the blog, which has all this information and lots, lots more. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Keanu. It's the Key and Peele comedy. It has a little kitten in it. There's a lot of wild stuff going on in this movie. Crazy, crazy stuff. So we're going to talk about it when we come right back.
A quick shout out to one of our sponsors who brings you this message, Target. If you haven't yet, you have to check out Made to Matter, handpicked by Target. There's a 100% vegan mascara from Pacifica made with natural ingredients. And Suja created a line of waters that contains billions of probiotics, are low in sugar, and 100% organic. Check them out and the rest of the Better For You products Made to Matter has to offer at target.com/made to matter.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Before the break, we talked about Free Comic Book Day, and now we are switching gears from comics to film. When we were looking for a topic, a topic for this week, we thought, well, geez, there's a Key and Peele comedy. It's got a kitty cat in it. That's right up Petra's alley. And Key and Peele are sort of up all of our collective alley. So Keanu stars Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele and a lot of other people in a movie that Jordan Peele wrote with Alex Rubens, directed by Peter Atencio. It's the story of, if you've ever seen a movie like Adventures in Babysitting, which is the comparison that Scott Tobias made in his review for NPR, these kind of like Adventures in Babysitting movies where you go out on the town, you're out all night, all kinds of crazy stuff happens, date night with Tina Fey and Steve Carell is like this. That's what this is. I'm going to go first to Stephen. What did you think of this movie, Thompson?
I liked it. I had gone into it with a little bit of mixed expectations, in part because of something that Scott Tobias says in his review for NPR, where he talks about how uneven the payoff is when you take sketch comedy people and put them in charge of making a full-length movie, that it is very, very hard to cobble together a linear plot. And so, you know, you have your mix. I mean, Monty Python aside, you've had very, very, very mixed results. Mr. Show had this movie called Run, Runny, Run. Mm-hmm. Kids in the Hall did Brain Candy. I will say from, thankfully, third-hand experience that the Onion movie is troubled. Mm-hmm. Wet Hot American Summer, even, you know, from the State, which is now obviously, some of these have turned into cult classics, but that it is very tricky. And I think one reason that it is so tricky. I have seen Run, Ronnie, Run, and you know, you've Bob Odenkirk and David Cross, and you take them from a show where they're playing a zillion different characters to a movie where they each play one.
Yeah.
Thankfully, in the case of Keanu, I really liked these characters, and I liked the movie. It is not necessarily a movie that I'm going to remember for very long, but basically you have this kind of engaging plot where these two kind of squares, one of them finds an adorable kitten, and the kitten is kidnapped, and they delve into this underworld where they have to adapt in order to ultimately reclaim the kitten. And I just found it cute.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think that their amiability, their likability clearly carries this picture. Some elements of it work better than others. But I just found myself kind of swimming right along with them, in part because I find them so engaging.
Right.
Yeah.
If the worst thing you can say about this thing is that it's just a very long Key and Peele sketch, that's still better than a lot of other movies.
Yeah,
it's
true.
And the thing is, as everybody says, it's very episodic because it is just feels like a series of sketches, which means that the tone shifts and the stakes shift from moment to moment. How much in danger they are feels very high in one scene and then very, very low in another scene. And there's one point where Peele turns to Key and says, "You almost got us killed." And I remember thinking, really? It didn't seem like that. It didn't really seem like that at all. It didn't matter to me. It was funny. The cameos work. Don't want to spoil them, but there's a lot of cameos in here, as people you would imagine you would expect to see in a property like this, and some you absolutely don't expect to see, and that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, I don't know if you would consider it to be, I don't know exactly what we're considering to be a cameo, but I think there is also a supporting cast here that's really impressive. I don't know that when he was on Saturday Night Live that I was thinking Will Forte was going to turn into like the guy I'm always really happy to see in a movie like this because you know it's going to be something good and weird. But he's in this movie and it's good and weird. And I sort of feel like, you know, what he's doing is not anything anybody else would do. One of the things that Petra talked about when we were talking about this movie that I also want to make sure we talk about is that, as Stephen brought up, they're essentially squares and they wind up in a world of criminals. But for them, this takes the form of what I think they themselves refer to as people who sound like they came out of New Jack City. And I think that Scott talks some about that in his review as well. So one of the kinds of humor that is all over this movie is them sort of code switching back and forth between their kind of square personas from their everyday lives and trying to talk like tough guys from movies. It's funny because our pal Gene Demby, when we talked about Key and Peele, the sketch show in July of 2015, he talked about the fact that people's performance of race plays a huge part in the comedy of these guys. And I would encourage you to seek out the stuff that Gene has written about them and about this issue, because it comes up a ton in this movie. And actually, in April of 2013, there's a piece that we'll link to that Gene wrote called How Code Switching Explains the World. And he talks about how he's trying to explain what code switching is. And he talks about this Key and Peele sketch where they're on the phone. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in that element of the humor, I think we would all say, seek out all this great stuff that he's done about these guys and this kind of comedy, because there's a ton of it in here.
We've been discussing this on the kind of universal level of the trope of sort of squares in over their head who have to improvise. And personally for me, I was so uncomfortable. I was convinced that they were going to get killed. And then I kept having to say, wait, this is a comedy about a cute kitten in a do-rag. It's going to be okay. They are not going to die. And interestingly, like every single time that I had a record scratch moment, went, wait, what? What? Half an hour later, the movie would come back and address that. And I'm not sure whether that was good or bad. It was sort of it was very dad humory to me. Like I went, oh, but that's funny.
Yeah. And one of the things that I think is so interesting about this movie is something that I've often noticed about their show, which is that it really goes kind of all out with how extreme the situation is. Yeah. Not necessarily the extreme the humor is. It's kind of like old Monty Python sketches where they would go ahead and cut your leg off or your whatever. Like, they will always take the comedy to that place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is no effort to stay in a realm of realism. If you think about, like, a comedy, if you're thinking, like, this is like a wacky comedy, fish out of water comedy, be aware. There's a ton of violence in it, and there's a ton of drugs in it.
One thing I will say about this movie is it did not perform extraordinarily well at its opening weekend at the box office. And I was thinking about that, like, gosh, are people not embracing Key and Peele the way they clearly should? This movie seemed to me to be perfect for cable. This felt like, for one thing, it's throwing back to a lot of like old action movies that you watched on cable a million times, but it feels like it just slots so cleanly into HBO at 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm. It's totally one of those movies where you turn on the TV, oh, Keanu's on. That cat is so cute.
Right. It doesn't have what a lot of the best Key and Peele sketches have, which is some kind of sharp satirical edge.
Right.
It completely avoids that. I think that would be hard to sustain over the course of an hour and a half. It would feel like you were being jabbed in the ribs, perhaps. I did miss it. I do think that they are at their best when they're making a specific point about something and showing and letting there be a little bit of outrage underneath the humor. Missed that here, but just made it more sort of pleasant and watchable and couchable.
There was a lot of stuff in there that I thought, oh, I wonder if the studio made them put that in, because here's a car chase and here's a gunfight and here's an unconvincing romance. And
Yeah, and I'll tell you the part that I really thought, where I had that same thought about, I wonder if that's a studio note. And that is, as I said, a lot of the humor is very dark and goes to some very dark places that you sort of think, I'm surprised they did that in this movie, right? But then there is a moment late in the movie, I don't think it's a spoiler, say there is a moment in the movie where they abruptly kind of walk a bunch of that stuff back that actually it wasn't as dark as it seemed like
What you're talking about.
And that's when I thought, oh, I wonder if that's a studio note, because that felt to me a little studio note. Like they were a little bit trying. Either it's a studio note or it's kind of a parody of what happens when you get a studio note. I don't know which it is.
I could the exact same thing. I could not figure out, like, is that a joke or...
Right. That it's kind of all undone. Although I will say, they're a little more honest at the end of this movie about what the consequences of this which I appreciated too. But I agree with what kind of you guys have said, which is it's uneven, right? Yeah. There's the plot.
Such as it is.
I am air quoting all over the place. Of a movie like this is just there to hang jokes on. Yeah. And I think when those jokes are good, there's an extended thing involving the music that Keegan-Michael Key listens to in the car that I really liked and thought was funny.
But they do a lot of callbacks to it.
And they do a
lot
of callbacks to it, and it kept making me laugh. Like, who really cares what the underlying plot is? I think the kitten is cute.
So cute.
You know, who doesn't want to watch a little tiny...
I teared up when...
Kitten. Of course you did.
Because I understand. I felt that bond. I did.
Wow, this is... I am a huge cat person. This is maybe the first movie I have never cried at.
I didn't say I cried. I said I surreptitiously teared up a little bit when he was cuddling the kitten.
Yes. Well, he does love that kitten. Mm-hmm. And he loves that kitten so much that he will go and fight drug dealers to get back his kitten. All right. Well, I will be curious to hear whether some of you go out, venture out and see some Keanu in the next week, or whether you have already seen it. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH, or you can tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? So stick around.
Support for Pop Culture Happy Hour and the following message comes from Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo understands that you work hard to get the most out of life. From starting a business to saving for retirement, there are a lot of things you want to accomplish. Working together, Wells Fargo will take the time to understand what you're trying to achieve to help you reach your financial goals. That way you can care for the people and things that matter most. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/together. Wells Fargo. Together we'll go far.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
So I wanted to take my kids to the movies this weekend and did not want to take them to Keanu.
Good call.
Which, you know, I feel comfortable about in hindsight. I did take them to The Jungle Book, which is a gigantically, massively successful movie. Mm-hmm. And I was curious. This movie seemed to capture the public's imagination in a way that it didn't necessarily occur to me that it might. But I think it clearly falls into some of the same sweet spot that we've talked about with movies like Jurassic World, that we were speculating might happen with a movie like Independence Day Resurgence, where it is nostalgia sweet spot plus technological advancement equals dollar sign, dollar sign, dollar sign. And also a movie that is just good enough. I was not blown away by The Jungle Book, but I was dazzled by how much is going on in it visually. As many people know, this is, against all visual evidence to the contrary, an animated movie with one live-action character who bounced through the whole thing. But everything in this movie is animated, and nothing in this movie looks like animation. It looks like live action. They used a lot of the technology that was being honed in movies like Avatar, and it just had me thinking the whole rest of the weekend about, like, where do movies even go from here? It's still an incredibly expensive technique to do this stuff, but you are suddenly really not bound by any kind of physical limitation if you can make everything except human beings look this unbelievably realistic. So it's a visually dazzling movie. I was largely overall charmed by it. It's got a great voice cast. I think Bill Murray in particular is super charming as Baloo. You know, you've got Christopher Walken doing his Christopher Walken thing. You've got Idris Elba as the villainous tiger. They do a nice job of skimming it down to kind of the essential songs. Just good enough, but some great scenes, unbelievable visual imagination, The Jungle Book.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week, sir?
Two books. The first is a graphic novel. That's actually the first in a trilogy by Faith Erin Hicks. It's called The Nameless City. It's set in this sort of fantasy, pseudo-Asian fantasy world where there's a city that keeps getting overrun and attacked and dominated by different people, and so its name is always changing, so the people in the city just call it the Nameless City. And it's got a girl and a boy, and there's parkour, and it's just really good. It's a lot of fun. Second is a YA book. We talked about good YA, by the comedian Jeffrey Self, who I came to know on a show on Logo called Jeffrey and Cole Casserole. Very funny guy, but he's been doing lots of work over the years, many different places, but he's written a book called Drag Teen, which is really a lot of fun. It's charming. It's funny. There is very little true angst in it. You know, it's basically, it's a road trip. It's about a kid trying to wrestle with the fact, not that he's gay. The fact that he's gay doesn't bother him. He's totally down with that. But, you know, how he could get into drag and what drag would mean. And there's this big contest that has enough money for him to go to college. If he wins it, it's a drag. And it's just really breezily written and a lot of fun. That's Drag Teen by Jeffrey Self.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Petra Mayer, what is making you happy this week?
The prospect that Glenn might lend me his copy of Drag Teen.
Mm-hmm.
So this week, I'm happy I had the opportunity to see play both at the beginning and this weekend at the end of its run. Everybody here, you probably all know that I'm a giant David Tennant fangirl. And
you don't say.
Yeah, you don't say. Luckily, I have marvelous, wonderful friends who will support and enable me in this. And because of the goodness of several friends, I was able to see David Tennant do Richard II on stage in Stratford-upon-Avon a couple years ago. And then this past weekend, I saw the last night of the run at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. And to see how the play deepened and got richer and more lived in over the course of several years of the same cast doing it. I mean, there was an interim. It hasn't been running for 3 years. But these people are now so familiar with this language. And one of the things I love about David Tennant, because I've seen him do Shakespeare a fair amount now, he's a wonderful interpreter of Shakespeare's dialogue. And usually he's the one on stage who sounds like he just talks that way and everybody else is reading lines. Mm-hmm. But with the RSC, everyone's at or above his level. So actually in this show, I particularly, the person who I loved the most was Oliver Ford Davis as the Duke of York, who is just so magnificently disgusted with everybody's misbehavior that he is your grumpy Shakespeare daddy and mine too.
Nice.
So this actually has been made into a DVD, so you can see what I'm talking about. Richard II is an odd play that Americans don't often get to see. It's not one of Shakespeare's best. It's kind of clunky. It's all in verse, and sometimes it doesn't land right. And it's about sort of the nature of kingship and a really unpleasant king who loses his crown because he's basically a shallow jerk. So if you get a chance to see it, it's a really interesting play, and I was enormously grateful to have the opportunity to see it twice and to see how it evolved over the course of the run. Yeah, Richard II, making me happy this week.
How wonderful. Thank you very much, Petra Mayer. How classy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was reaching this week because we are, as we tape this, in the week that we'll bring Captain America, Civil War, for which I'm doing an interview event that you will hear more about later on this here show. And because of that, I have been rewatching a ton of Marvel movies. Which means I've not had a lot of time for happy making other things. So I am bailing out and going with one of the trailers that they showed before Keanu, which is, much to my surprise, for the Lonely Island movie Pop Star, in which Andy Samberg plays a boy band. I don't know if he's acknowledgedly an aging boy band member, or if that's interior joke that Andy Samberg is playing a boy band member. You sort of can't tell, but it is a music faux documentary, and I love a music faux documentary. I have somewhere along the line become a person who likes Andy Samberg after not being one at all when he was on SNL, really. As I think I've talked about before, not only what he does in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which I love, but also what he did in Celeste and Jesse Forever, which is a terrific movie. It's a really funny trailer. Our friend DJ Khaled, not our friend. I wish.
We are accepting his friendship.
Exactly.
If it is offered.
He is in it. There are just a whole bunch of Joan Cusack is in it, and Carrie Underwood is in it. You know, again, Will Forte, I believe I spotted. And it made me laugh. And there's a line at the end of the trailer in which Andy Samberg says, "It takes a village to make me look dope." And it really made me laugh because that is indeed how such a person would talk.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me laugh. So Andy Samberg's trailer for Pop Star, I believe it is called Never Stop, Never Stopping.
Yes.
It's a funny trailer. I have no idea whether the movie's going to be any good. Perhaps we'll circle back to it. But the trailer is really funny, and we'll link to that. So that's what I got this week. I got a trailer that I laughed at the movie theater. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon. And you can follow Petra at Petramatic. That's PETRAMATIC. You can follow our producer Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer emeritus and music director Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band Hello Come In provides our in and out music, which you're tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening, and we will see you right back here next week.